Okay, continuing by reading 11 through chapter 15, text 11 through 20. So who's going to appreciate all the details of what we do? It just doesn't happen, does it? It'd be very rare. I haven't found it happen. But boy, would I like it if it did. If someone ever used my reading program and said, I can understand that to do this, you had to do, if they understood the steps that were behind it. I mean, the other day, Chandrakoti was asking me how I did it, and maybe for 20 minutes I was telling her all the different steps and how this had to happen and this happened and this happened. But the whole time I'm thinking, does she really care? Is she really interested? I'm probably boring her to death. She probably has a million other things she'd rather do. But if she was really interested, how wonderful I would feel. Especially if she said, wow, and then you did that? And then you realized you had to fix the whole thing, and you only had 3 days, and you had to stay up all night, and then you fixed it like this, and the reason you have this sentence over here is because of this. So that's what Krishna's looking for. So when we're eating, if we can eat like that, really relishing the flavor and the texture, then Krishna becomes very, very happy. What to speak of the fact that it's Krishna's prasadam. And we can also be meditating not only on just the food itself, but how Krishna ate it. And how the food, we're not only tasting the flavor of the pumpkin and the, what do you call those green fruit? Fujaros? Fujaros. Fijero? Fijoa. Oh my God, okay. So not only the flavor of the fijoa, but now at least I know how to say it. The fijoa and the pumpkin and the, but also, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that all this food has been mixed with Krishna's saliva. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, the devotee in prema, they see Krishna's beauty, they smell Krishna's fragrance, they touch Krishna, and they taste Krishna. So what does God taste like? So that way we worship Krishna by eating. Yat karoshi, yat ignasi, yat dahoshi dadasi, yat dapastisi kanteya, kat purushvam adarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat. I am the fire of digestion. Well, it's not only the taste of the food. According to Ayurveda, there's two tastes, one in the tongue and one in the stomach. And I was just hearing Prabhupada talk about this today in Prayers of the Personified Vedas. He was saying that people think that by eating they live. He said, no, by digesting. If you eat but you can't digest, how do you live? I had an experience many, many years ago. I was going to Vrindavan from America, and on the way I got sick with one of my recurrent headaches. my constant companion in this life, as Satchinandan Mars would say, my teacher. Pain, my teacher. Anyway, so my teacher appeared with me on the plane and was still staying with me, and I took my headache medicines, and they didn't work. And After like 5 days of them not working and being completely incapacitated, I started thinking about this verse, how Krishna is the fire of digestion. And I thought, the reason the medicines aren't working is they're not being properly digested. I'm not assimilating them. And I started praying to the fire of digestion in my stomach. I started saying, Krishna, you're the fire of digestion. Kindly digest this medicine for me so that I can become cured. And I was very quickly after. That was quite an interesting experience. So Krishna is also the fire of digestion. He's everything, as we'll read in the next verse. It says, unless the Supreme Lord helps him in digesting, there's no possibility of eating. He thus produces and digests foodstuff, and by his grace, we are enjoying life. All right, so we've got, and I'm sure I've been through this with you guys before, but I'm just going to go through it again. So pick some food, any food. Avocado. Okay. So how is the avocado growing? It grows on a tree. Mm-hmm. How does the tree produce the avocado? By the? Where is the tree getting nutrients from? Okay. The earth. And Krishna said he is a fragrance of the earth. And he said he's the earth. Where else is the tree getting the ability to produce the avocado? Sun. Krishna said he's the sunlight. And also Krishna is saying here also from the moonlight. And where else from? Water. And Krishna said he's a taste of water. And then also, of course, the jiva in the body of the avocado tree If the jiva is gone, there's no more avocados. And Krishna says he's the life that, of all that lives, and he's ability. And then there's the ability of the person who picks the avocados, like your sister is out picking persimmons. So there's that. The Krishna says he's that ability. He says he's intelligence. Takes some intelligence to pick avocados. I don't think you could ask chimpanzees to pick avocados. They probably wouldn't be very good at it. It takes some intelligence. Right? Some intelligence, some ability. And it takes some intelligence and ability then to transport them. Usually nowadays they're being transported by some sort of motor vehicle. The intelligence and the ability to make the motor vehicle, to drive it. The petrol, where is that coming from? That's coming from plants, which got their energy from the sun. Then it's being delivered to some shop, and that also has some intelligence and some ability that the person is organizing them in the shop. And Krishna, of course, is also wealth. So whatever money that you're using to buy the avocado, that's also Krishna. And then your intelligence and your ability to put the avocado in a bag, and the bag is made out of, what's the bag made out of? If it's made out of plastic, then that comes from oil, which comes from the sun. If it's made out of cotton, then that plant is also getting its energy from the sun. That's also Krishna and water and the earth. And then you're carrying it back, and then you're using your intelligence and your ability to cut it. Now, of course, then you're not, I've never heard of any. Actually, I have one time had someone cook avocados. I was once in a temple where the cook made avocado halva. Do not do that, please. Anyway, an avocado you're not going to cook. But if you're cooking something, then also the fire. Krishna says he's the fire that's cooking it. And avocados we don't generally cook. But just the ability to cut it, and then the intelligence to arrange it nicely on plate, and then Krishna's eating it, and Krishna's tasting it, and his saliva is mixing with the avocado. And then as you're eating it, the flavor, and the Krishna's the fire of digestion. So everybody eats. Anybody here not eat? Do we have any yogis here that just directly live on Krishna as sunlight? There are yogis that can do that, you know. There are yogis, they don't have to have the food go through all those processes, and you just eat the sunlight. I've met a few of them. But generally we eat. And how easy is it to be Krishna conscious when you eat? And how easy is it to be Krishna unconscious when you eat? You're just eating. You're not even paying any attention to what you're eating. So we can eat without paying any attention, or we can eat with the idea just of I'm enjoying this sensation on my tongue and my belly and forget about God. So as we start thinking that Krishna is a person, it becomes so easy. Being Krishna conscious is very, very, very easy. All of us deal with food. We all deal with digestion. Okay. There it is. I'm going to make sure I... Okay. 15. Sarvasya chaham riti sannivisho matasmatir gyanam apohanam cha vedestu sarvaraham vejo vedantikud veda vedeva chaham. For me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. I taught this to all of my students and my children and my grandchildren as the finding things verse. I can't find my keys! Chant 15:15. So this is, I think my students and kids probably know Bhagavad Gita 15:15, one of the best of any verse. Can't remember something, can't find something, don't know something, chant this verse. Matasmatir gyanam apohanam cha. Krishna, you are the source of all knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. You know, forgetfulness is nice too. Isn't it funny how we forget pain? Isn't that funny? Can you remember pain? You can remember that you had pain, but you can't remember pain. Interesting, huh? Forgetfulness is also nice. Of course, the jiva, as Krishna says here, the living entity forgets everything of its past life. This is one difference between the soul and God. Very important point brought up also in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna says to Krishna, wait a minute, what do you mean you spoke this to the sun god? And we're the same age. You're telling me you're millions of years old. And Krishna says, hey, you know, Arjuna, you were there too. But you're a jiva and you've forgotten, but I haven't forgotten. And Prabhupada says there's always a difference between the living entity and God. And sometimes people think, many times people think, that if you're a pure devotee, you're going to know everything like God. No, that is not true. Now, there are some pure devotees who know a whole lot because that's their service, like Narada Muni knows a lot. And in fact, he'll even show up and say things that Krishna apparently doesn't know. Like, oh, by the way, you know, Aniruddha has been taken away to Banasura's daughter. So sometimes, or Samba's been captured by the Kurus for kidnapping Lakshmana. So Narada Muni sometimes shows up and gives this information, which Krishna apparently doesn't know. That's just his pastime play. But even Narada doesn't know everything the way Krishna knows everything. That's why he's visiting Krishna's palaces and he's astonished. Oh, in one palace Krishna's doing this, another palace Krishna's doing this, another palace Krishna's doing this. And even Lord Brahma says, I really can't understand you. Even Yamaraj doesn't know every thought of every single living entity. And of course he only knows this one universe. So just because someone's a pure devotee or a liberated soul doesn't mean they know everything like God. Doesn't mean they have all the potencies of God. And if one thinks that way, then one will just become discouraged and disappointed. And we see that devotees sometimes think, oh, my guru must be omniscient like God. And when they find out that he's not, then they lose faith in spiritual life. Which is silly, because it says right here in the Bhagavad Gita that the living entity is not omniscient like God. All right, so and all of our knowledge and intelligence and forgetfulness is coming from Krishna. Now, in this purport is one of my favorite quotes anywhere in Prabhupada's books, and something that is very, very difficult for a conditioned soul to accept. Prabhupada says, the Supreme Lord is so full that for the deliverance of the conditioned soul, he is a supplier and digester of foodstuff, the witness of his activity, and the giver of knowledge in the form of the Vedas, and as a Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita. He is worshipful by the conditioned soul. Thus, God is all good. God is all merciful. So generally, conditioned souls do not believe that God is all good and God is all merciful. We generally believe that God is very cruel. As I said in the beginning, when one is honest enough and realized enough to see things as they are, then we realize that all the suffering is due to me and my desires. That we really don't see, again, the naked form of our desires. If my desires manifest as blood and pus and stool, then they're pretty nasty. If that's the form that they take. So my suffering here is entirely, completely my responsibility. Completely. It is not God's responsibility at all. And you could say, well, why doesn't he make a situation where there's no suffering? It's like saying, why doesn't he make something false true? It's really a nonsensical thing to ask. You know, why doesn't Krishna make it so you can, you know, eat metal and not get hurt? But that's not the kind of body that you have. So we're desiring something that's impossible. There's a really nice essay Manu Prabhu just posted on Facebook. Really, really nice. And he says that, you know, our consciousness is me, and I'm thinking that everything revolves around me, and everything is for me. And I have relationships with other me's. You know, I find somebody and I think, oh, this person is good for me. And so I create a me family. And we all get together and we all just talk about me. And eventually, and then of course there's fighting because I'm trying to have everything be for me and all the other me's are also trying to have everything be for me. And this causes resentment and anger and eventually war. And one day you might think, well, wait a minute. If all the me's think that everything is for me, we can't all be right. You know, what's really going on here? And he says then the me has a dream where the big me with a capital M comes and says, you know, really, I'm concerned about you and I want you to be happy. And then the little me thinks, you? There's not just me, there's also you? And here the biggest me is concerned about you. He's concerned about little old me. So the source of our suffering is I'm thinking I'm something that I'm not. I'm thinking I'm the big me. Whereas actually the big me, the big Krishna, he's concerned about everybody else. He wants to give. He's not interested in taking. He doesn't need to take. He's Atmarama Atthakama. He's no need to take anything. In fact, he's just giving, which is what Prabhupada's saying here. He's just giving and giving and giving and giving and giving and giving. And my position, my dharma, is to also give. Because I'm part of him. Mama Vamso Jivaloke Jiva Bhutta Sanatana. He's a giver, and I am also a giver. I am not by nature a taker. And when I try to become a taker, then I suffer. That's not his fault. So he is still giving unlimitedly. He is all good. He is all merciful. And he's even giving here to the conditioned souls. It's also just hearing how all Krishna's qualities, the most amazing is how kind he is to the conditioned souls. We conditioned souls are not kind, generally speaking, to our enemies. Generally speaking, we're not, unless we're very saintly. We hate our enemies. We want our enemies to suffer. We want them to be taken down. We want them to lose their opulences. We don't want to give them anything. So I don't want to give them a love. And we've become, in a sense, the enemies of God. And still he's giving us everything. He's still just giving. So God is all good. God is all merciful. Also, what's interesting here is that Krishna not only is giving us facility to enjoy this world, but he's also giving us the Vedas. He's also giving us the way to get out of the world. So he's doing both. He's facilitating our falsity, and he's facilitating our coming back to truth. Prabhupada says, one can attain perfection in three stages. By understanding Vedic literature, one can understand his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By performing the different processes, one can approach him. At the end, one can attain the supreme goal, who is no other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here Prabhupada is explaining Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, which are terms you should know. Sambandha is our relationship with Krishna. Abhideya is the process for attaining him, and Prayojana is the goal. Prabhupada talks about this in relationship to marriage. Right? He'll say that Sambandha is the, you form a relationship. Oh, now I'm your wife. You're my husband. First you have the relationship. Abhideya, you perform the activities of husband and wife, and Prayojana, the goal is you have a child. So before you can attain a goal, there has to be some relationship. Then there are activities in that relationship, and there's some goal, there's some purpose. Recently I was talking to Veer Krishna Swami, who was saying that one of the main ways you can accelerate your Krishna consciousness is to always meditate on the goal of what you're doing. Not to do anything mechanically. Why am I doing this? We talked about this last time in terms of why I choose to do things. What is your goal? Why am I chanting japa? Why am I offering artik? Why am I cooking? Why am I out here in the streets of Auckland approaching total strangers and asking them to buy a book on spiritual life? What am I doing this for? You know, why am I observing all these cleanliness rules? Why am I sitting here listening to this puffed up Urmila speaking on Bhagavad Gita? You know, what am I doing? Why am I doing these things that I'm doing? To focus on the goal. Always have the goal in mind. And a very interesting thing that Prabhupada says in his purport to Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, Text 11, which relates to this and what we talked about last week. And this is in relationship to Sukadeva Goswami being asked a certain question by Maharaj Brikshit, and before he answers, he meditates on Krishna. Prabhupada says, no one is free to act freely and independently, and as such, one should always seek the permission of the Lord to act or eat or speak. And by the blessings of the Lord, everything done by a devotee is beyond the principles of the four defects typical of the conditioned soul. I think it's very, very hard for somebody who's not yet in love with Krishna to really ask permission for everything, to act or to speak or to eat. We're constantly acting. to say, can I move my hand? Can I do this? Can I do this? But that's actually automatic when someone's at a high level of love. There's a historical novel called Yajnasaini, which Krishna Maharaj recommended to me that I read, and I noticed that Shivaram Maharaj had it translated into Hungarian. It's a historical novel. It's basically the story of Draupadi, but Draupadi from the scripture, but also with the added insights of the author. So some people don't like that. I know one devotee who said, well, I don't want to read it because I'm not sure how much is coming from Shastra and how much is coming from the author. But there was a section where Draupadi and Arjuna are speaking, and they were saying, whatever, I think it was Draupadi talking to Arjuna, she said, whatever you do, you first offer to Krishna. She said, even your breathing, every breath you take, you offer to Krishna before you take that breath. So I was thinking about this, reading that, how the great devotees, whatever they do, they're taking permission from Krishna. They're offering it first to Krishna. They're connecting first with Krishna. They never see anything as being separate from Krishna. So probably, again, we were not going to be able to do that 24 hours a day. But at least for the major things that we do, at least before you start some major activity, ask permission from the Lord. May I have your permission to do this? Give me intelligence, knowledge, whatever forgetfulness I need. Sometimes you need forgetfulness too, right? Isn't it? If you want to concentrate on something, sometimes you've got to forget all the other things that you need to be doing. Give me the ability, give me the intelligence, give me everything to do this. Let me connect with you. Please let me do this the way you would like me to do this. Please let me do this in a way that's pleasing to you. And eventually, we can come to the point where every breath, every step, we're connecting with Krishna. But we can start. It's not that difficult to start. And my dear friends, if you forget to do this, just pick up from where you are now. Don't get discouraged. Don't think, oh, goodness, I did last week. I haven't remembered to connect with Krishna in any meal or any step. Okay, start now. And then you remember a little bit, then you'll forget again. Then you remember a little bit, but you forget again. That's okay. Wherever you are, just keep starting from now. Just keep starting from now. And eventually, it will become part of us, because you know what? It really is part of us. Okay, 16 through 18, as we were saying, is also nutshell. Two classes of beings, fallible and infallible. Above them is the Supreme Lord, and then Krishna says, I am the Supreme Lord. Now you notice in text 16, you have the Sanskrit prabhupada's translating the word for word, kutisto, as in oneness. And it's interesting that he doesn't have anything about oneness in the translation, but he does in the purport. Prabhupada says, oneness does not mean they have no individuality, but that there is no disunity. They are all agreeable to the purpose of the creation. Well, they're all agreeable to the purpose of, Prabhupada says in the spiritual, there's no creation. They're all agreeable to the purpose of existence. So the main point here is that there's individuality, that whenever we're talking about oneness, it means oneness of qualities or oneness of purpose. Without some oneness, there's no relationship. You can't have a relationship with something that's entirely different from you. I mean, what relationship do you really have with a chair? You don't really have a relationship, do you? Not really. Because it's intrinsically different from you. Even Prabhupada says in the material world, says this in Nectar Devotion, that you can't have a real relationship even with a member of another species. It's on a false platform. You know, the dog is really just thinking, oh, here's a source of warmth and food for me. It's not really the kind of relationship that you want. You know, what I'm thinking the relationship is and what the dog is thinking the relationship is something different. Of course, that's true often with our human relationships, too. But when do you have a really nice relationship with someone is when there's a sense of oneness. Do you have any friends like that? That you almost feel like you can finish each other's sentences? You know, I have a few people like that I've met in my life. Where you feel like you're on the same wavelength. That's what we look for, all this compatibility. What do we mean compatibility? We mean there's some oneness. How much relationship can you have with somebody who's incompatible with you? Pretty hard. One devotee was telling me the other day, he said, yeah, my wife and I have such different thinking processes that it's practically like we don't communicate. There has to be some oneness. And with Krishna, there's absolute oneness and absolute difference. Now that is the perfect relationship, isn't it? If you could be absolutely one with somebody, in absolute, complete, total harmony, and yet be absolutely, completely, totally different people. Because if you're completely, absolutely the same person, well, that's boring. You ever try to talk to yourself for a long period of time? We also want to deal with somebody else other than myself, don't you? Right? Or you find sometimes, like, have you ever tried to work something out and you write it down, maybe even talk to yourself, and when you talk to somebody else, it all becomes clear? So we don't want only oneness. We want difference. I want somebody who has a different perspective and a different way of doing something. I want some variety. But I also want the oneness. So that is there with Krishna. And the infallible beings are the beings who are fully accepting this oneness with Krishna. Infallible, I'm just accepting that I'm different from Krishna. I'm not doing things in harmony with him. I'm not doing things in harmony with truth. I'm doing things that are out of harmony with the truth. I'm doing things that are false. Therefore, I become fallible. So we're just reading, Prabhupada said that if you're connecting everything with Krishna, then you're above the four defects of the conditioned souls. And as soon as I'm disconnected with Krishna, it becomes fallible. So, of course, conditioned soul doesn't like this idea of oneness because they're thinking that if I fully connect with Krishna, I'll lose my individuality. I'll lose, and what is that individuality? What is that one thing we own? Our will, our desire. We think I'll lose that. That Krishna will just take my will. He'll force me. But are those sort of relationships very pleasing? In this world, we do try to force others. But if we succeed, is it pleasing? No. We were having that whole discussion about how, you know, your mother wants you to go to the island only if you really want to go. If you were to say, you know, Mom, I really don't want to go. I'm going just because you're forcing me. She wouldn't be pleased with, nobody, none of us would be pleased with that. If someone says, look, I made this cake for your birthday because I feel obligated. You know, I don't actually like you. You wouldn't even want to eat it. Which, again, is ironic because as conditioned souls, we want to force others. We want to force others. Every once in a while, I keep up with what's going on in America. I don't know why. I haven't lived there for about 3 years. I still identify as my Upadi. Anyway, so I was reading some of a speech that the president gave, and they asked him, the reporters were asking him, what was the most humbling thing about being president? And he basically said that he couldn't control other people. He said, I realize I can't go to the members of Congress and just flip a switch and have them all vote for my programs. And that's very humbling. And I thought, obviously he thought he could, because they were asking, you know, what's the difference between before you were president and now? And he gave two analogies. One was flipping a switch, I forget the other one. But both of them were about forcing. Both of them was about seeing other people like they were machines. You flip a switch and the machine does something. And he was saying, I realize I can't do that. I've got to work with other people. I've got to listen to them. I've got to take their opinions into consideration. And most of us think that's horrible. Oh, so much time and energy I have to take. When all that's going to happen is everyone's just going to agree with me anyway. So although we try to force others, although we often wish that we could just flip a switch on the other people we deal with to get them to do what we want, especially family members, if people actually act like that, it's very displeasing to us. Because then there's no relationship anymore. Then they're just, you know, a machine. How pleasing is it just to, you know, have a relationship with your computer? What's pleasing is the people you communicate with over the computer, through the computer, not the computer. Nobody would use email or Facebook if it was just some automatic thing coming from a computer. You're relating with other people. So we shouldn't be afraid that being one with Krishna means that Krishna is going to take away our will. He wouldn't want to. I don't want to. Why would he? How would that be pleasing to him? He has no interest in that. That's what we mean that Krishna has no interest in enjoying the material energy. Krishna has no interest in enjoying something that's forced. It doesn't appeal to him at all. It's not his thing. And a person who can associate with Krishna, in order to associate with Krishna, reading in the 14th chapter, Mamcha Yogi Avacharyana Bhakti Yogina Sevate, Sagunan Samatit Chaitam, Brahma Bhuyai Kalpate. In order to associate with Krishna, you have to first be liberated. What does liberated mean? Simple definition of liberated, one word, simple definition. Free! Free! You have to be free! Krishna doesn't establish an intimate loving relationship with someone in bondage. He only has an intimate loving relationship with people who are free. But by thinking like this, we gradually get over this fear and this anger and this hesitancy of surrendering to Krishna, that we don't have to worry. Like I gave the example last week, you offer your food to Krishna, he gives it back. And it tastes better. Prasadam tastes better after you offer it, doesn't it? Everybody notices that. Even gross materialists notice that. What's in this food? So we give Krishna our will. We become one with him. And he gives us back our will. Better than before. Tastier than before. Okay, so here in 17, Krishna speaking in the third person. There's the Supreme Lord. And then he says, and I'm the Supreme Lord. So in 18, Prabhupada says, Krishna is therefore the greatest personality. And Prabhupada's emphasizing again that we are all individuals, but that we will never surpass Krishna in power. And in 19, again, this is again very much like 10.8, if you know all this about Krishna, you'll surrender to Krishna. Why are we reading all this? Why are we studying this? Why are we taking our time? We might much rather be sleeping or eating or doing something else. So why are we taking the time to do this? Because by studying these things, we'll become inclined. Yeah, I think I would like to surrender to Krishna. That sounds like a good idea. It starts changing our desires. And the more we know about Krishna, I've said this before, you know, with people in this world, sometimes the more you know about them, the less you want to have to do with them. You know, there are people who get married, and after they get married, they think, oh, if I had known all this about this guy, I never would have married him. Why didn't you tell me this before we got married? How many years we were married? It was about 10 years. Yeah, it was 10 years. And my husband bought me a sewing machine for my birthday. I said, Prabhu, you know, I'm not going to sew. I said, it really isn't going to matter what you buy me. I'm just not going to sew. I said, I tried it when I was 13 and I was a failure. And I tried it again after I joined the movement. I tried to sew for the deities, and I'm just useless at it. I have no talent for sewing at all. I'm not going to do it. I said, maybe I'll fix a seam here and there. But don't expect I'm going to start making your corsets. And then I was surprised he got very angry. And he said, why didn't you tell me before we got married that you didn't sew? So when I was growing up, all the women sewed. I mean, his mother can make a coat that looks as good as what you'd buy in a shop. And she used to teach young girls how to sew, his mother, his sister. He said, I had never met a woman who didn't sew. I said, well, why didn't you ask me before we married whether or not I sewed? He said, I didn't think of it. He said, I assumed that all women knew how to sew and liked to sew. That was the first time I realized, I mean, it sounds funny, but each of us have our attachments, you know. I mean, I had my attachments that were disappointed also. And I realized, wow, this is really a big thing for him. You know, it's really a painful thing for him that this woman he married doesn't sew. It's something that's causing him a lot of distress. No matter how bad I felt about it, I never learned how to sew. But my point is that sometimes you get to know somebody well, you just become disappointed. And you think, you know, I thought you were like this, and actually it turns out you're like this. We become sorry. But the more you know Krishna, the nicer it is. Not only does he fulfill all your expectations, but beyond that, he's better than you could have anticipated. So therefore, we know, we study about Krishna. And Prabhupada says here also, don't waste your time just speculating about the truth. He says there are many philosophical speculations. The perfect knower, without wasting his valuable time, engages directly in Krishna consciousness. If you want to know about Krishna, then ask him. Don't just sit around guessing, well, God might be like this, well, God might be like this. Ask him. Go to the scriptures. Go to the people who know him. And the more that you know him, the more that you'll fall in love with him. And then Prabhupada talks about the word bhajati is very significant. In many places, the word bhajati is expressed in relationship with the service of the Supreme Lord. Bhajati means to worship, to revere. So this is some idea of the mood that the person will have when they know about Krishna. And even the intimate residents of Vrindavan, they're not worshiping him in awe and reverence, but they're still worshiping him. They're revering him. They're looking up to him. He's the darling of everybody in Vrindavan. Even the trees and the plants and the cows and the water. They're all enchanted by Krishna. Now this is confidential, guya. Why confidential? Because we can understand it only in relationship to how clear we are of the modes. Krishna Das Kaviraj talks about some things in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said, I shouldn't talk about such intimate things, but I know that the non-devotees won't understand it anyway. Now, of course, we do have to be careful that we present things according to the audience, because there is that offense to preach the glories of the holy name to the faithless. We should not be preaching above people's capacity to understand as far as possible. On the other hand, when you have a mixed audience, you don't need to really worry about the people in the audience who can't understand stuff, because you know what? They won't understand it anyway. And I've seen this over and over and over again. It's almost amusing how you'll preach something and there's certain people in the audience who just don't get it. They just don't hear it. You know, sometimes I'll be worried, you know, should I make this point? Because there's so-and-so and so-and-so in the audience. And of course, things have to be spoken with discretion and with care. We do not. Generally, if we see the way Prabhupada talked in public, I think I made this point here, how there's a lot in Prabhupada's purports and not in his public lectures. Did I make that point here? I made it somewhere recently. That in Prabhupada's public lectures, his preaching was much more basic than in many of his purports. And Prabhupada discusses some very high things in his purports that he rarely talks about in a public lecture, very rarely. And we find that Prabhupada very rarely tells classes that are just stories. He usually just has the stories to illustrate the philosophy, and he's very careful how he presents Leela. You know, he's just very, very careful as far as his audience goes. At the same time, Prabhupada would discuss very high things in public lectures. And you understand it according to your capacity to understand it. So this is true with the scripture in general, which is why we find that as we become purified in Krishna consciousness, we read the same scripture. And you say, you know, did somebody change my Bhagavad Gita when I was sleeping? Where did that sentence come from? Where did that paragraph come from? I never knew it said that before in the Bhagavad Gita. And that's because it's becoming revealed to you as you read it. It says that the Bhagavatam has arisen like the sun, that it's Krishna's incarnation, that Krishna becomes revealed in the pages of the Shastra, and you're actually dealing with the person. Just like the holy name may appear to be sound vibrated like by the tongue, and the deity may appear to be just marble or wood, but Krishna is manifesting through the deity and through the holy name and also through the Shastra. It's not just ink on paper. And therefore it's very secret. Which is also why we can distribute these books out on the street. You know, when Prabhupada was translating Chaitanya Charitamrita, some of which has very, very intimate sections about Radha and Krishna, we were distributing every volume on the street, the talks between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy. I've heard that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati would rarely discuss the talks between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy. I don't think ever. He'd have the devotees read through it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't think he ever gave any classes on it. But there we are, just going out to the airports and on the street, and giving people who are meat eaters and wine drinkers and illicit sex mongers and so forth, gamblers, we're giving them Chaitanya Charitamrita. Maybe now we don't so much anymore, but at least when Prabhupada was translating them, in order to get the best deal on printing, you know, you have to print like 5,000, 10,000 copies. And Prabhupada only had 5,000 disciples. So where are we going to do with the other 5,000 copies, you know, or 10,000 copies? We had to distribute them. And how are you distributing such intimate things. Plus, you have Prabhupada's purports, which are very important. And I've noticed that many of the books available today to devotees that are being translated from the previous acharyas without purports are, anyway, I don't like the fact that they're being, that they're so widely available, and that people who are very new in Krishna consciousness are reading them. And I think that's a dangerous thing. First, read all of Prabhupada's books at least once. And as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, at least like 10, 15 years chanting Hare Krishna before you start touching those things. I mean, unless Krishna gives you some sort of special mercy, then he can do what he likes. If you're chanting Hare Krishna for 1 month and he personally comes into your room playing his flute, then that's another. Then go ahead and read those books. No problem. That can happen. That's possible. Anything's possible. But generally, people don't understand because they don't have the adhikar to understand. So even if it's there, they don't understand. So there's has to be a balance between that we should tailor our presentation for the person and the audience, and knowing, especially if you have a mixed audience, that people at certain levels just simply won't understand anyway. Does that make sense? Giving the holy name to the faithless particularly applies to somebody who initiates an unworthy disciple, by the way, just for their own name or fame. So just to preach something very advanced just to gain followers, basically. And Prabhupada says here, whenever devotional service exists, the material contamination cannot coexist, because material contamination is me-centered and falsity, and whenever Krishna is the center and there's love, then there can't be falsity. It's impossible. So if we want to get rid of Maya, all we have to do is become very attached to Krishna. All right. We have 15 minutes because it's a program today. So if we could go, let me start here. If you could just, whatever you'd like to share or whatever question that you have, if you have one. When I'm done, you can just go. What? No, I'm fine. I don't think you can be attached from the desire for appreciation. Sorry? I don't think it's possible to be detached from the desire for appreciation, because the pure liberated souls in the spiritual world are asking Radha and Krishna to appreciate their service. What you can be detached from is material appreciation based on your upadhi, sarvupadhi, vinir muktan, tat paratena nirmala, rishikesha, rishikeva, sevanam, bhakti, uchite. The kind of appreciation and respect we should be detached from is false. If I think I am this body, and I am so talented, I am so intelligent, I am so beautiful, I am so whatever, and I want that to be appreciated by other conditioned souls on a false platform. Be detached from that. It's all false. But that you want Guru and Krishna to appreciate your service? Can't be detached from that. That's part of you. If you try to be detached from that, you'll become an impersonalist. So how do you become detached from the false thing? Become attached to the real thing. Prabhupada said the residents of Vrindavan are just thinking, I want to make Krishna smile. So that should be our goal.
Is it Krishna is the ability man, and so if no one else is appreciating our service or what it is we're trying to do, and yet we're trying to serve Krishna, is it healthy to sort of think, well, I know I did this best I could, and I'm
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Of course, if your authority chastises you, you have to accept that too. If you think, oh, I've done the best I can, and your guru or your authority comes and says, this stinks. It shouldn't be just that, you know, we expect that Krishna is going to appreciate anything, even if everything's awful. But of course, Krishna appreciates the effort. He appreciates the desire to please him. But you won't be able to get rid of the mundane desire for respect and appreciation on the false platform unless you cultivate it on the real platform. Isn't that our whole philosophy? We should be working to please Krishna. What does that mean? That Krishna expresses pleasure at what you are doing. That's your happiness. What does that mean? If Krishna is expressing pleasure, then what are you getting? You're getting appreciation. It just depends on which are you looking at it, from his point of view or your point of view. That's the happiness of the devotee, that Krishna is pleased. That's also true materially. If I make some sacrifice for somebody, you know, there was a time when I was traveling where many years ago, where I almost died, and some devotees took me to the hospital, and they spent the whole day without eating. So I very much appreciate that they did that. I didn't ask them to do that for me. Just circumstantially, they took me there early in the morning, and nobody ever brought them any prasadam. So the fact that they did that sacrifice for me is something I still appreciate. That's how we judge love. If somebody never makes any sacrifice for me, then they probably don't really love me, if they only do something for me that's easy. So in that way, Krishna can be pleased by our suffering. Not that he's a sadist. That's the exchange of love. Is that all right? Yeah.
There's no question. But because here, Krishna talked about, or Prabhupada talked about, he dissipates the darkness. This reminds me one devotee, I think that in this one is disciple. Because she can see, but she says, Krishna, the literature or the description, and now I can see the spiritual world.
Ah.
And she can perceive the Lord, and she was so happy, and she described it. It's so nice. I read before, and this reminded me.
Thank you. Mm. So, something you'd like to share, or something you'd like to ask?
Yes.
Which one?
13. Genius, genius. Like being able to like make spheres
float in the sky.
Like suspend spheres, like in this world, like we're not capable of that. Like suspending something in the sky, and like we, you know, we have to have noise and like pollution. And else, yeah, just thought, wow, you know, if there was that, it would be like extraterrestrials have arrived.
I think we suspend a few satellites. Of course, we have to get them up there with pollution and noise.
Yeah.
And they sometimes fall out of orbit.
Yeah, they still need kind of artificial power.
Yes.
And I was also thinking about how we exploit, we take Krishna's energy and we manipulate it in such a horrible way. Through his genius, everything. You know, the moon giving delicious tasting vegetables. We put things in glass houses, and I don't know if that affects.
I'm sure it does affect it. Haven't you noticed that a lot of the modern food has no taste?
Yeah.
So there's many reasons why a lot of modern food has no taste, but part of it may have to do with the moon.
Yeah, the way that we might change.
Horrible.
The energies.
Yeah, the closer you get to doing things the way Krishna wants, the tastier the food is. Anybody can say that. That's a pretty simple thing. If you grow food the way Krishna intended, it will taste better. Let's put aside health for the moment. It will just taste better. A lot of modern food has, practically speaking, no flavor at all.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
You were talking about like the meanness, like some of the forests here in New Zealand, like in some places that you go to, like there's this virgin forest, like it is so beautiful, like the visual harmony, like some of it, you know, they're all, it's really peaceful, like,
yeah.
It's just so beautifully placed, and it's like they're not me plants kind of thing, like
they're not me places.
Or plants, you like,
yeah.
Community there, like you go in some places, like there's all these vines. Like trying to strangle each other and thorns and just, yeah, it's so horrible, like on the, you know, on the fringes of cities and stuff.
Right.
Yes. Yeah,
you get a little glimpse of a place that's in harmony.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I know you probably didn't come prepared for anything, but is there anything you'd like to share or anything you'd like to ask? No, okay. I ask everybody if they can come. You don't have to, but if they would like to come with either something to share or some question to ask. Do you have a question or something you'd like to share?
I was just thinking about the forcing thing and how we have this tendency to want to force others because we think we're Krishna. Why is it? It's not because we think we're Krishna.
It is because we're Krishna.
But Krishna doesn't force.
No, he doesn't force.
Well. Mm. So why do we think? Yeah, and I was just relating it to book distribution and how in the very beginning when I first started doing book distribution, there's this one exchange I remember, and I was really forceful with him, and he didn't leave. Like, if they don't leave, I think, okay, well, I can just keep trying, you know. He was like, no thank you, but he didn't leave, so I just kept trying. And then he was just like adamant that he wasn't going to get it, but I was adamant that I was going to force him to get it. And in the end he got it, you know. And I asked my god sister, I was like, is that okay? Because, you know, I didn't feel very good afterwards. He walked away and he had the book, but he was like crying. I was like, okay. She was like, no, it's not the best. I mean, spiritually, it's, you know, it's amazing, but not really the best way to deal with the situation.
Well, the feeling you had is a good indicator.
Yeah. But because he got the book, I was like, well, it's got to be good, you know? But when you deal with people in a different way, like when you understand that.
Well, there's some good there. Anybody who has any touch with Krishna, there's some good. But we don't want to turn people into Kamsas who are thinking about Krishna in anger. I mean, better someone thinks about Krishna in anger than doesn't think about Krishna at all. But it's not our policy to get people to think of Krishna in anger. It's not our policy. Like Prabhupada would see newspaper articles where they were criticizing the movement, and he'd say, but they're saying Krishna so many times, so that's their benefit. But it's not that we intentionally try to have negative newspaper articles. That's not our role as Krishna's servants. He's not trying to get people to hate him. They already hate him. That's not what we're interested in. And in the long term, you know, if you have a pleasant exchange with someone, even if they don't take a book, just the fact that you're a nice person. I was just hearing Shiva Ramaraj talk about this, how in Hungary, the government has a program where 1% of your taxes goes to religions. And if you don't designate it, the government just has some plan. But you can also designate which religion you want it to go to. So the devotees get a certain percentage of the undesignated 1%. But if people designate it, they get all of that 1%. And I think that he said that from each person, it's something like 30 euros, which is not insignificant. I mean, the devotees get a huge amount of money from that 1%. And so Shiva Ramaraj has personally been going to different businesses and trying to get the proprietor of the business to ask their employees to designate the Hare Krishnas for the 1%. And the devotees have a very good reputation in the country, especially because of their eco-farm. But he was speaking about meeting with one banker who just really impressed him as being a gentleman. Just how polite he was, how welcoming. And he said he was just so impressed with this man. And he gave the example of one of the devotees in Hungary, Radhakund Devidasi, who was meeting with some government person. the government person was, I think, coming to the farm, and he was, it was some special day, and he was going to say, give some speech, and he didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness, wasn't really inclined, was, you know, nothing. But for half an hour before the program, he was speaking with this devotee, Radhakund. And when he got up to speak, he said, you know, I don't know anything about Hare Krishna, but if it produces the kind of people that I just spent a half an hour talking with, then it's certainly something good. Right? We had this with our devotee, Jayananda. And Jayananda would get donations of boga and donations of materials and stuff for Rath Yatra from everybody and anybody. I mean, after he died, people would come out of bars sometimes, you know, and, hey, where's that Jayananda? And they'd say things like, I know, I don't know anything about what you guys are doing, but if that Jayananda's into it, it must be a good thing. So that's a lot of it. You know, if we can just be, I'm just thinking about a shop. I've had this experience, and they certainly say it in merchandising. You go into a shop, and they don't have what you want. And they'll say, you know, you can find what you want at my competitor down the street. You know what they just did? They just made a customer. You know, I'm going to be very likely to go back to a shop that will tell me honestly that they don't have something that I want and tell me where I can get it. Where I see that they're not, isn't it? Rather than they try to convince me to buy something at their shop that I don't like. Oh, it does fit you. No, it doesn't fit me. No, yes, it does. It looks perfect on you. You know, well, no, it doesn't. And if they said, you know, really, we don't have anything that fits you, but the shop next door does. I'm going to go back to that store. Why? Because I'm going to trust them. So you may not sell a book that day, but, you know, you may sell a whole set of books to that guy a week from now. It's rare in this world to find somebody who's not trying to exploit you and who respects you. That's rare. That's very, very rare. So we should be examples of that. You know, at the same time, I mean, Prabhupada did say to sell the books by hook or by crook. So we also do sometimes, you know, employ various means to try to convince people. We want to actually convince them. We don't want to force them. People should walk away thinking that the devotees are very nice. We should be living books. Is that all right? So how to balance that? How to somehow give people Krishna consciousness by hook or by crook, and at the same time, you've got to be a living book. My daughter-in-law's parents asked Prabhupada, how should we preach? And Prabhupada said, you should invite people to stay at your house for 3 days, and at the end of 3 days, you should say to them, now just live exactly the way I live. We should be so impressive. And how did Prabhupada start the movement? He started the movement by people being impressed with him, really. People thought, wow, I want to be like that. Okay? Does that make sense? And how do you feel when somebody connives you into buying something you didn't really want? Of course, Krishna will use that. He has ways of using it. But better to be the other. He'll still use it. Even if the person throws the book in a trash bin, you know. I know of devotees who came from pulling books out of trash bins. But I'm sure that Krishna could use you if you acted in another way, too. Do you have something you want to share?
Just appreciation.
Oh.
I didn't really find anything that I really
wanted
to
say.
I always wonder a little bit about Sambandhan Abhyudaya and Prayojana. The Sambandhan and Prayojana seems like the same thing.
Well, like Prabhupada gave that example, that the Prayojana is the child and the Sambandha is getting married. What's the goal of your relationship? Or just like your fiancé is trying to start this restaurant. So Sambandha, you establish a relationship with the partners. But that's not the goal. The goal is to sell food. What's our goal? To exchange love. But before you can exchange love, you have to have a relationship. That's for our beginners, our relationship is just Jivera Swarupaya Krishnara Nityadasha. I am Krishna's servant. I am a part of Krishna. I am a Krishna's servant. And as we develop in Krishna's service, we start realizing our sthayi bhav. Sthayi means it stays, and bhav means a feeling. So there are also like vavichari bhavs that come and go. But the Sai Bhav is your basic relationship. What's my relationship with Krishna? I'm Krishna's flower, or I'm Krishna's lover, or I'm Krishna's father, or I'm Krishna's friend. I'm Krishna's slightly older friend, or I'm Krishna's slightly younger friend, or I'm Krishna's friend at the same age. Or, you know, I have a particular sambandha. I mean, even, you know, I like to think of all of you as my friends, but I know some of you hardly at all, and some of you I know a little better, and I have some relationships with each of you that are different. My relationship with you is a little different than my relationship with you. So even if I say, Lalilamayi is my friend, and Vaishnavi is my friend, but still there's some, there's a particular flavor, and some people are just my superficial friend, and some people are my deep friend. There's some people that I reveal my heart to, not very many of those on the planet. Okay? So that's sambandha. I have a particular relationship with Krishna. As I said, at the beginning, the sambandha is just, I'm part of Krishna, I'm Krishna's servant. I'm the disciple of my guru. When the Pandavas, at the end of their education, were showing off their skills in weaponry, they had to give their sambandha. Who are you? I am the son of Kunti and Pandu, and I am the disciple of Dronacharya. You know, Lord Brahma knocked on the door. You know that story, Lord Brahma knocked on the door, and Krishna comes and says, the doorkeeper comes and says, who are you? What Lord Brahma are you? That's sambandha. What's your identity? Who are you? I can't start to have the fruit of a relationship unless the relationship has been defined. So the fruit isn't just the definition. If I say, I'm Lilamaya Subhadra's friend, okay, I've defined the relationship. Now we have to do things as friends. And what's the fruit? The happiness we feel in our relationship. The exchange of food, the exchange of gifts, and the exchange of confidences. That we do things together, we enjoy each other's company, that we give things to each other, that's the fruit. But we can't have that fruit unless we've defined the relationship. And the fruit is going to depend on how we define the relationship. If instead of my friend, you're my servant, well, that's a little different relationship. The fruit's going to be a little different. There's this young girl who comes and cleans my room once a week. And I don't, she's more like a servant than a friend. I'll say things to her like, oh, you didn't shake out that rug well enough. Go and shake it again. Did you move the couch? A different girl came this time because the first girl's sick. I said, make sure you move everything, clean under everything and behind everything. Did you do that? Yes, I did that. I said, doesn't look to me like you moved the couch. Looks to me like the couch is in the same place and the table looks to me like it's in the same place. Did you move them? No. Go move them. I wouldn't talk like that to you. No way would I talk like that to you. Because that's not the sambandha that we have. I wouldn't feel comfortable talking like that to you. You follow? And my son-in-law has said to me several times, he said, you don't treat my wife enough as an equal. And finally I said, you know, she's my daughter. He said, she may also be one of my best friends, but she's my daughter. In this life, at least she's my daughter, and to some extent I'm always going to treat her as my daughter. I said, I'm incapable of treating her entirely as a peer. I told him, it's interesting because I have friendship with other women who are her age that I think of as peers. But I just can't see her as a peer. I said, you know, 95%, but not 100%. I said, just the way it is. Because that's our sambandha. Does that make sense? Okay? You are very, very welcome. But so you can see why we can't, until we're free of the modes of nature and until we realize our Sai Bhav, we can't be engaged in devotional service on a very deep, meaningful level. Does that make sense? Until I know what my relationship with Krishna is, so then it's just a general practice level. Just as general practice, okay, I'm a servant of Krishna. That's also one of the reasons we have a guru. But I can understand that. Well, I'm a servant of my guru. You follow? I can have that kind of sambandha. So therefore, the devotional service I do before my real sambandha has awakened is devotional service and practice. I'm just practicing. Or you can think of it like a drama. You know, once you're assigned a role in the play, then you can practice your specific role and you can get into your character. Of course, you're not assigned your Steibov, it's something that comes from the heart. But before that, you can just get general lessons in acting. You're just practicing. You can't really go on stage until you have a role. Of course, you can take on practice roles as part of your practicing. So practice yoga. I'm Krishna's servant. I'm part of Krishna. Krishna is my father. Krishna is my mother. Yeah, general. A general way. And that's good enough for practice. It's good enough for sadhana bhakti. You don't want to artificially take some, you know, well, I think I'd like to play the princess in the play. You know, that doesn't work. You have to wait. You know, once you mature, then you can actually take on your real somebody. Right? And Mickey, something you wanted to share or ask?
Yes. How can I view Krishna's appreciation?
How can you feel? Start appreciating him. Give what you want to get. The way we get is we give. Start appreciating Krishna a lot. And start appreciating other... I'm sure you feel you're already doing it. Increase it. Whatever we want to get, we should give more. And if there's something we feel we're not getting enough of, give more of it. Because we get back what we give out. So generally we feel we're giving enough. But give more. Appreciate Krishna more. And then you'll feel his appreciation of you. He'll reciprocate. That's natural. I mean, honestly, how many times that we eat do we really appreciate Krishna? Work on it. And you'll start getting reciprocation. One devotee asked me in London last summer, is it all right to want reciprocation from Krishna like that? That's our mood, you know. When are you going to reciprocate with me? Well, are you reciprocating with me? So appreciate it more and more and more. I mean, the pure devotees are appreciating Krishna at every moment. And Krishna's appreciating them at every moment. Actually, he's already appreciating you. But our ability to feel it is because we're the ones who've cut off the relationship, not him. He's already appreciating you at every moment. Just like parents have love and appreciation for wayward children. Even if the children don't call, the parents are always thinking of them. I don't think any of you are parents, but you are. So you know what it's like, right? Even if your child is rebellious, you still love him, right? You still appreciate him. You never stop loving him, even if he's nasty. You know, your two-year-old says, I hate you, Mommy! But you don't stop loving them. So Krishna has never stopped loving and appreciated us. Not for a moment. So if we're not feeling that, then who's cut off the relationship? I have. So I reestablished the relationship. That takes practice. It takes practice. They say 10,000 hours of practice to learn a material skill. I calculated that would be 2 hours a day for 13 years. All right, we should stop now because there's programs today. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Love, ladies.